So Anthony Davis is officially extension eligible, and now that we know who the Wizards took number one overall, and now we know what they were going to pay Trae Young, this is going to be the biggest question surrounding this team. Luckily, Josh Robbins of The Athletic jumps on with us to kind of help us out with that a little bit, which it's also very simple, as you've put here, Josh. The Wizards are going to wait until the season to have extension talks with Anthony Davis, which is just a calming headline for somebody like me that has been praying for that to be the approach. Is this now a situation, Josh, where it's really based on they truly do want to see if he's worth giving extension to, or is it more of a, we want this to sound like we want to give him an extension, and then it becomes, he actually looks good, let's try and trade him as the season goes on?
I think it's fair to say that trading him at the during the season is a possibility, a real possibility. Particularly if after they discuss an extension, they are far apart. If they wouldn't be able to come to an agreement, then the Wizards would have to consider trading him, because you can't risk losing him for no one in return. And he has a player option for the year after this upcoming one. And so while it might seem unlikely that he could turn down his 27-28 player option, in that case, you'd still have to consider a trade. But I do believe that they will swap figures, extension figures, because Anthony Davis remains a top-tier two-way player. But would they come to an agreement? Or would they be very far apart? I think that remains to be seen.
I think Anthony Davis is it's always so complicated with him, because like you mentioned, I mean, this is one of the great bigs we've had in the NBA. When he's healthy, it's always been about his health, and there were trade rumors with the Warriors this offseason, and, you know, the reports where they weren't interested eventually because of the same thing the Wizards have to weigh in, whether or not the health and the age and the contract is going to be a thing. What is a range that you think? And I know this is a hypothetical, so I don't know how specific we could get here. But, I mean, obviously the actual extension would be 4 years, $275. And obviously Rich Paul has said he wants that. Like, he wants the full thing. Well, the Wizards probably aren't going to give him that. Is there a number or a contract framework that you could see where both sides would actually say, you know what, let's actually sign and let's keep this thing going in Washington?
Depends on how high the Wizards are willing to go, and it depends on how low AD and Rich Paul are willing to go. You're right. 4 years, $275 million in a scenario that would start in 27-28 and end in 30-31 when he's 38 years old in the middle of that season. That's the top, the most money that they could agree to. That's the uppermost tier. That's the max. Is it realistic? I find it difficult to believe that it's realistic in an age where the second apron exists. I mean, just look at Joel Embiid's contract, or look at what Paul George is being paid. These are very onerous figures in an age of a second apron. But that's not what you asked me. You asked me, what's a possible analog for this? Well, Kevin Durant is now 37 years old. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I believe he's got an average annual salary of $45 million. Now, he's had some injury issues over the years, including that Achilles tear back when he was with the Warriors. Maybe that's an analog that could be referenced when these two sides really try to negotiate come the regular season.
You know, there was a lot, Josh, about whether or not Anthony Davis even wanted to play for the Wizards. And, like, I kind of understand it, right? Because, you know, he's gotten traded a couple of times. He's at that point in his career where he just wants to compete for championships. And the Wizards are a young, up-and-coming team that has playoff expectations, but not championship expectations. Do you know or have you heard anything more about his desire to truly be a part of this team? Beyond, obviously, the extension talk, if we were putting the money aside, just from a basketball perspective, do you know sort of where he stands or have any instance as to what he's thinking at this point?
I have a two-pronged answer to that. First of all, he has said that his impressions of the Wizards now that he had been here for the remainder of the season were far better than what he saw from the outside. It's no surprise to you that the Wizards organization from the outside, from people who have not been a part of it recently, they're generally not good. That's something that the Wizards are trying to change, and they are making progress there. That's the first part of my answer. The second part of my answer is, although AD hasn't been doing interviews over the last 2 months, I did see an Instagram reel where someone, I think an independent content creator, did pull him aside somehow, somewhere, in which he asked AD, well, how many games do you think the Wizards are going to win? And AD's answer, I believe, was approximately 40 games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a clue that he continues to doubt whether a team that had the worst record last year, admittedly a team that was not trying to go full speed at trying to win games, that's putting it mildly, can go to a team that makes the playoffs outright without the play-in. I think he's still skeptical of that. Certainly that Instagram reel that I saw would certainly indicate that he continues to be skeptical.
Yeah, and listen, jumping from 17 to 40 wins is still a big jump, but that's different for like where he is in his career versus where the Wizards are as they're building this thing up. You know, we've obviously, Josh, we've seen teams make big jumps, and we've watched the Spurs and the Thunder and, you know, the Pistons did it, the Cavs even years ago. Big jumps from one year to another in terms of wins. What are you hearing from people around the league in terms of sort of like around what the expectations are for this Wizards team? Is it play-in? Is it around 40 wins? Is it like, hey, they could actually surprise even more and get over 45? Like, what's kind of just the general idea of what the league feels about this Wizards team right now?
The last time I took a real hard look at this, like a real survey, I spoke with scouts, man, that must have been in March or late February after the AD trade, after the Trey Young trade. And at that time, the general consensus was, well, there could be a lot of variance here where maybe they finish as high as sixth and finish as low as maybe 11th. Where the scouts, the executives I spoke to for other teams, believe that they would, when the season ends, would have a chance at reaching the playoffs. I think that's fair to say. And by chance at reaching the playoffs, that's at the minimum a play-in spot. A few people were more bullish than that. So I think it's fair to say somewhere between 6th and 11th, with the more likely scenario probably being around maybe 8th, 9th, considering that the rest of the East, for the most part, should be better than it was last year.
Yeah, the East is really interesting. Talking to Josh Robbins of The Athletic, you know, obviously you've got the Sixers with all the hype around them with LeBron, and Jaylen Brown was just introduced today, and you have the Knicks. But then, you know, after that, I think there's a lot of questions around a lot of these teams where there's this second tier of teams that, it feels like it's a large group there. When you look at the Eastern Conference right now and where it stands, you obviously talk about it being improved here. After sort of that Knicks, Sixers kind of top tier, where are you on some of these other teams? Like, do you expect the Pistons to be another 50-something to 60-win team again? Because I kind of look at that and see at least an avenue where maybe the Wizards can kind of jump a couple of teams that maybe don't live up to some of those expectations that might be set on them in that middle of the East.
I'll try to go very quickly. Detroit went 60-22 during the regular season last year. I don't see them winning 60 games this upcoming year. I just don't. Mm-hmm. We can get into that if you like. Boston, they're not going to win 56 games this upcoming year, but I don't see them dropping down to 45 or worse. The Knicks are going to remain very good, 50 or above. Cleveland, I see as remaining at or around 52 wins. Toronto, 46 wins last year, probably are going to remain there and do better if they do wind up acquiring Kawhi Leonard. Philly's going to be better. Charlotte should be probably at least as effective, even without LaMelo Ball. Miami should be better than 43 wins. Milwaukee, going to be worse. Mm-hmm. Bulls, probably going to be worse. Indiana, going to be much better with Halliburton coming back. So, and Atlanta will be better, I think. So that's, I hope, the context that you're looking for, that you know, a lot of the teams that were, a couple of the teams that were down last year are going to be better, and the teams that were up at the top of the standings, they're not going to be as good, but they're not going to bottom out.
No, that's exactly what I was looking for, because I think we really talk about those top two teams, like you mentioned, in the Sixers and Knicks, and how good they're going to be, and especially the expectations. And after that, I think you have a lot of teams that are kind of in the middle of that pack or that tier. You know, and obviously, look, the Wizards have their own level of excitement just around somebody like A.J. Tabonsa. What has impressed you the most about what you've seen from A.J. Tabonsa since he was drafted by the Wizards, whether it's on the court or off?
It's a combination of the two. It's that, as my colleague David Aldridge has said, he wants all the smoke. Yeah, he wants to, and by that, DA means, and I agree with him, that he wants the expectations. And even more than that, the expectations of going on to be the number one pick and maybe starting as a rookie, which I think he probably will do. It's not only that he welcomes it, that he didn't look the least bit fazed by the spotlight cast on him during Summer League. And I get that it's Summer League. Those are not the real games. But in a perverse way the league is covered nowadays and the way fans watch the games, the Summer League performances really have more scrutiny on them than the majority of regular season games. So it's that he was not only willing to accept the smoke, but actually welcomed it. That impressed me.
And I think, Josh, that's what's so important, is that there is a weight on somebody like A.J. Tabonsa getting drafted by the Wizards with a draft that had so much hype, and he's the number one overall pick, and it just feels like he's embraced all of that. And listen, like, yeah, sure, Summer League is Summer League to a point, but if a guy is the number one overall pick and dominates in Summer League, then that's a good sign. It's certainly there. If there was one thing, though, with Tabonsa that you'd look at and say, okay, he's got to work on that as he gets into his rookie season, what would that be?
Two things. Okay. His three-point shooting, mm-hmm. Which I'd like to see him improve over time. It doesn't have to skyrocket right away. And then his dribbling in traffic, you know, having a more compact dribble in traffic, which is not easy to do considering that he's a legit 6'9" and a half in shoes. So, but these are things that can be improved. You know, what he does do is attack the rim and draw fouls. And some guys, even after 5+ years in the league, never do that. So he has that already. I think he's got all the capability in the world to become at least an above average 3-point shooter and an above average wing ball handler. I'd rather have those two areas be the areas he needs to work on rather than being able to attack the basket and being able to draw fouls.
All right, Anthony Davis and the Wizards going to wait until the season starts to have extension talks. Josh Robbins has all of that up now at The Athletic. Really good to talk to you, Josh. I appreciate the time and the insight.
Nick, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, there he goes, Josh Robbins. Yeah, I mean, it's just a calming headline, right? You look and say, okay, let's give this some time, because that's been part of the conversation, right? Is Anthony Davis wants a max extension. So do a lot of players in the NBA. It doesn't mean that it's the right choice. If you look back at players that have gotten 4-year max extensions at 33 or older, it's Kevin Durant, it's LeBron James, and it's Steph Curry. That's it. That's it. And listen, Anthony Davis, at his peak, one of the best bigs we've ever seen in the NBA. The injuries are a major problem. You add age to that, and you add, in some ways, questions about where he is mentally at this point. Look, and I don't even totally blame him for this. Anthony Davis thought he was going to be a Laker probably the rest of his career. It was kind of like, oh, they're kind of shifting from LeBron to Anthony Davis. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you think you were shocked by the Luka trade? Anthony Davis was blindsided by that. Suddenly he's in Dallas. He's barely there. It's a dysfunctional mess. He's the face of a trade that nobody wanted in Dallas. It's not his fault. And then he, out of the blue, gets traded at the deadline last year to the Wizards. But yeah, the guy's looking around going, what happened to my career? This is why I don't blame athletes for wanting to take some level of control over the trajectory of their career, where they are, where they play, because out of the blue, you can just suddenly have to go from L.A. to Dallas to D.C. in, what, a year and a half? I mean, it doesn't take very long for that to happen. So, in the end, it just doesn't really make sense. I'd rather see Anthony Davis have a great start to the season, boost that trade stock, and then you have the opportunity to move him and get that, get a couple of first-round picks out of it. I mean, yeah, you're not going to get what the Pelicans got when they traded him, but of course not. He's 33. But it just doesn't really make sense to sign him to an extension when this is mostly a young team. And you've also got other guys like Alex Saar. It would hurt his development. I know he's hurt right now, but you're going to want Alex Saar to get those opportunities. And you're not going to need necessarily Anthony Davis out there if Alex Saar is healthy and continuing to grow the way that he did. But he's going to miss some time rehabbing, so that's, you know, that's a problem, which is a perfect time for Anthony Davis to be out there first, get more minutes. Alex Saar gets back, gets worked back into the rotation, and maybe it's not, the minutes are a little bit lower, doesn't start right away. It's a perfect situation for both of them. It just doesn't make sense, though, for the Wizards and Anthony Davis long term. And that's, you know, that's fine. All right, Nick Ashew. I'm seeing a lot of workout videos of Anthony Davis right now. This is that time of year. The tradition used to be, there's Ben Simmons working on his jump shot, and he's playing dudes that look like me. 5'11 at very best in some gym somewhere. But I'm seeing a lot of Anthony Davis working out with Wizards and Trae Young and all that. He's bought in for the beginning of the season. So here's my prediction. Anthony Davis and the Wizards, if they haven't already had the conversation, we'll have the conversation of, look, we're on different timetables. We get that. Let's at least have good faith conversations, and let's get you out on the court healthy. We'll manage your minutes, make sure that you show everybody that you're rested and that your time in Dallas is put behind you and everything that's gone on. Let's get your stock up. We'll trade you to a contender. We both win. That's how you handle this situation. Because if it's anything other than that, you're forcing something. It's the old square peg into a round hole thing, right? Like, Anthony Davis wants to play for a team that is going to win a championship, competing for a championship. The Wizards are building a team that should be a playoff team next year. That's not saying that the Wizards can't be in the title of contention in a couple of years. But they're just not there yet. Or at least the expectation isn't there yet. Look, if you came back from the future and tell me they win 50 games next year, I'll go, okay, that kind of could be possible. If you told me they win 40, I'd say that's also possible. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but they can't be a 17-win team again. I think we know that, right? We see teams make major jumps all the time. The Spurs have done it, Thunder have done it, Pistons have done it, Cavs did it a few years ago, too. I mean, it happens all the time, but when you have two guys that are on different timetables, like, just, they've already committed $212 million to Trae Young. Trae Young is at least on the right side of 30. Anthony Davis is 33. You heard me mention it with Josh Robinson at the end of that last segment. Like, the three guys have gotten four-year extensions or four-year contracts, whatever. These max deals at 33 or older. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James. They didn't have nearly the injury history that Anthony Davis has had. And it's just, the situation doesn't make sense either. I mean, it gives the Wizards a trade piece, and it gives the Wizards an opportunity to retool this roster more. Add maybe either it's another veteran and a first-round pick, potentially, if you can get his stock up. Don't rule that out. Don't rule out the chance that you could still get a first-round pick for Anthony Davis. Because there's a lot out there of like, well, his stock is low. Yeah, it's low, but it doesn't take much to raise a guy's stock like that. Because if there is a team that starts off a bit slow, and let's say they're in the Western Conference, and they want to keep a certain star on their roster happy so they don't have to go through what the Bucks just did with Giannis, they might say, hey, let's go get Anthony Davis. Let's give up a first-round pick in 2031 and go trade for Anthony Davis and believe that our training staff can keep him healthy and that our coaching staff will manage his minutes and make sure he's ready for the playoffs, because that's all that matters. What if the Denver Nuggets decided they thought he was going to help them as a rim protector and a rebounder so Nikola Jokic stayed happy in Denver? I'm not saying, again, this is not me saying that these are the best choices for those teams. But it's me looking at the history of the NBA and telling you this happens. This is something that you can do, is raising that stock. Because even if a team says we could get 2 years out of Anthony Davis, he's got a player option after this season. Now, $62 million. If he doesn't think he's getting a long-term deal, mean, the bare minimum is you want to lock in and get that $62 million secured. Now, if another team says, don't pick up the option, we'll give you a two-year extension, you go that route. Like, there are ways to negotiate all this. But you could, in theory, have Anthony Davis for half of this season if you trade him before the deadline, and then all of next year. Now, I get it. You could say, well, Trae Young opted out. Yeah, he did. But Trae Young signed at a specific number for a reason. That $212 million was the most money that any team around the league outside of the Wizards could have given him. So clearly, there were other options. He wanted to stay with the Wizards, and he said, I'll take technically a pay cut and not take more than what I would have gotten in Chicago. So the Bulls were apparently interested, too. Anthony Davis isn't getting four for $275. It's just not going to happen. Now, he has all the right in the world to ask for it and want it. Yeah, it all makes sense. But, you know, this Wizards team right now has a lot of young players that you want to give the opportunity to actually grow in. Like, you've got vets on this roster. Trae Young's got to come in and be the leading scorer of this team now. Not A.J. DeBonsa, Trae Young. Right? Like, that's, you get paid $212 million, you're now the guy. He's not the face of the team. He might be the most recognizable at first to the casual fan, but the face of this team, the future of this team, is A.J. DeBonsa first. But right now, the guy, the number one option, has to be Trae Young. Because that's what you brought him here for. That's what you're paying him here for. But you've got him. You've got Chris Middleton back on the roster. Like, you've got some other guys that can bring that veteran presence that you need while still allowing for Trey Johnson to step up in year two and get more minutes, more opportunities. Got to stay healthy. Alex Saar obviously has to recover from that surgery he's had this offseason. And that's, again, that's the good transition of Anthony Davis, then more Alex Saar. You move Anthony Davis when Saar is ready to pick up bigger minutes. Will Riley, I love Will Riley. I think Will Riley's going to be real good this year, and he's going to be looked at as one of the steals of that draft last year. They've got a lot of guys that at some point they can't just be looked at as young players that need to be surrounded by veterans. At some point, you got to take the training wheels off and say, go. Learn from what you did last year. This Wizards organization has shown that they got some good player development there. Like, they're getting the most out of this talent. And if you can continue to show that growth, adding A.J. DeBonsa to the mix of this team, like, you've got a good team. And we've watched young teams grow together. You sprinkle in some vets, sure, but you've watched them grow together and have big-time bursts. Right, look at the Spurs. They went from 34 to 62 wins, and they were in the NBA Finals, and that's mostly a young team. Like, they've got some guys that have been there for a few years, but they're still in the younger phase of what you'd call an NBA career, right? You know, mid to late 20s. I mean, this is the way that you are going to build a team now in the NBA. You tank, even with the new rules, and then you kind of build around it. You have to draft well. But you don't need to go out and sign these big max deals to guys that are in their 30s. It's just not... It doesn't make any sense for the Wizards to do this. And in the end, I don't think they're going to either. If they were really... Like, this is sort of the situation where you got to build up a lot of the... Like a relationship, right? Rich Paul is the most powerful agent in the NBA. Most powerful agent. You want to have a good relationship with him. Even if privately you're like, look, man, like, let's talk about the timetables here. Anthony Davis wants to be with a contender. We're looking to get to the playoffs, get to this point. Publicly, let's make sure we prop each other up. We have a good relationship. It's a good conversation. We're looking to get into the season. We want to test each other out. But you do it all in good faith and publicly say good things about each other. Anthony Davis, Rich Paul, the Wizards, all of that, because it helps the Wizards. If Rich Paul is talking about the Wizards being a free agent destination and a place he'd send his clients, and he wants Anthony Davis to sign a long-term deal there because of their future, you think that doesn't help the Wizards? That absolutely helps them. Because for so long, the reputation was that they only cared about hockey in that building. It's not the case anymore. They've changed their approach. They've changed the front office. They've changed the way they've built, and they've done it the right way. So now, building that image and that reputation around the NBA is important for this organization. And you can use this Anthony Davis situation as just that. Because when Rich Paul has your back, man, you're in a good spot. He is powerful. And for them to have the ability to go through this that right way, and then, hey, man, we'll get Anthony Davis where he can be. You think Rich Paul is going to work behind the scenes talking to teams? Like, hey, if he's healthy, what would it take for you to go and trade for him? What would it take for you to go trade for Anthony Davis? Agents work on this stuff behind the scenes all the time. And that's how this situation works out for everybody. But it does not end with a four-year, $275 million extension. And if it does, the Wizards are crazy. And I will be very upset, as I think a lot of people will. Just at 33, it's just not, it doesn't work anymore. I mean, you're talking about an extension that's going to end for Anthony Davis when he's in his late 30s. How many games are you going to play at that point? It's just, it's not worth it. It doesn't make any sense for them. This is the right way to do it. And I don't even think they're interested in DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan's a bucket, but, like, do they really need to go get him at this point? Again, you start loading up on these guys that are going to go out and get you 20 points a night, but they're vets and they're going to want their shots, and you're already taking away a ton of shots and a ton of touches and usage from a lot of the other young guys with Trae Young on this roster. But you paid him, so now he's got to live up to that role. You start doing too much of that and sprinkling in all these other veterans and guys that are still in the free agent market that just want to go get theirs at this point in their career, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for anybody. And it doesn't match the plan and the blueprint that the Wizards have had. That's worked. It's all worked, finally, from this point. Like, they've made this thing work, including the basketball gods bestowing their magic powers on them and saying, you will have the number one overall pick. We would have taken even two, right? One or two, you'd have been good. You get the number one overall pick in a draft that has been more hyped than LeBron's. I mean, really, we're at the point where it's, I would argue there's actually more hype around this overall draft class than we had in LeBron's class in 2003. Now, I'm not saying LeBron, but that class as a whole, this was loaded. You're telling me that's not a sign the Wizards aren't on the right path? They get the number one overall pick. Everything works out for them. Don't mess this up. Don't mess this up if you're the Wizards. Nick Hashew on the Fan. Usually the Dallas Cowboys like to have contract fights, but I guess this time Jared didn't want to do that with Quinnen Williams. Nick Hashew on the Fan. The Cowboys and Quinnen Williams agree to a 3-year, $105.9 million extension. I know you really care about that. 0.9 versus 0.7. It's the largest defensive lineman contract in the history of the NFL. Oh, well, you know, sometimes we like to actually make sure we pay our guys, and he didn't want to have a battle, and neither did we. I like the way that Quinnen Williams sneezed and blessed himself when he was drafted years ago, so we just thought he was a great Dallas Cowboy. That's what I think Jerry Jones actually said. You know, they got him from the Jets last year. They gave up a second-round pick. They gave up a first in 2027. You gave up a defensive lineman, but listen, Dallas has gone out this offseason and tried to work on one of the worst defenses in the NFL. The defensive tackle market in general in the NFL right now, too. Jalen Carter got 4 for $152. Jeffrey Simmons got 3 for, like, basically the same as Quinnen Williams. I mean, It is very clear that you need to build your teams from the inside out, and we should also be spending money on defense in this league, right? Look, everything is cyclical in sports, and sometimes there are trends where everybody copies, and then you continue to just, like, see it more and more and then realize, like, not everybody can do it. The Warriors are a great example. Back when they became the Warriors, right, peak Warriors, everybody wanted to play like them, shoot tons of threes, run up and down the court, just let's spread the floor and let's get to the rim and let's do small ball, positionless basketball, all of that. And teams tried it. You got to have the right pieces to make it work. That's what made it so innovative. Now you're starting to see a swing in the NBA where it's getting back to a little bit more in the mid-range and just getting a little bit more into, hey, defense actually does matter. There is a priority for players that will also play defense now again in the NBA. The pendulum's swinging a little bit the other way. You're still going to have a lot of three-point shooting. Like, that's not going to go anywhere. Bigs are still going to be trying to stretch the floor. All that's still going to have value, but you're seeing a little more balance there. And you're going to start to see more of that in the NFL too, where just look at what we had in the playoffs last year. Look at the teams that made the Super Bowl. It wasn't because of their quarterbacks. Again, Sam Darnold was good in the NFC Championship game, but that was about it. Their defenses are what got them there. And a majority of the teams in the playoffs had success because of their defense first. And listen, as it gets colder and the weather gets bad, you can't always expect your quarterback to air the ball out 45, 50 times a game. You've got to be able to run. You've got to be able to play defense. You've got to get stops. That's why the Commanders went out and spent all the money in free agency on defense alone, like they did. Got to get after the quarterback. Got to disrupt offenses. Like, these are things that matter. It's why I was so ecstatic that they drafted Sonny Styles. Like, he's checking all of the boxes for this team right now. He's a disruptor. He has the chance to be what, you know, Micah Parsons was when he burst onto the scene for the Cowboys, right? Forget the contract extension and the battles or what. Like, Micah Parsons is a beast, right? And if Sonny Styles can play like that, they're in a good spot. You have to have game wreckers on the defensive side of the football. And yeah, it's defensive linemen and sometimes it's linebackers. But when you have some of these defensive, these teams that have a defensive centerpiece, right? That's the difference maker. And I think we're starting to see now more and more teams understanding. Because here's the thing. If you don't, and Dallas has Dak Prescott, and I hate to say it, look, good regular season quarterback, right? But they realized they had to address things defensively because they've got major weapons offensively. Two of the best wide receivers in the NFL are in Dallas right now. But if you can't stop anybody, who cares? You got to put up 45 a game. Getting some stops allows you to actually beat teams for real and let your offense do what it needs to do and follow an actual game plan versus, oh my God, we got to throw into this thing and just try to get ourselves back in this game. Same thing with the Commanders. You start building out this defense and you get the results you're looking for. Adafe Owe getting after the quarterback. Leo Chanel being, you know, essentially like brought here to make smart plays. A fundamentally sound linebacker. Championship pedigree. Still just 25. Obviously Sonny Styles. Frankie Louvu now it seems like is starting to climb back to maybe the Frankie Louvu that we saw in 2024. All these pieces start to come together and you've got a defense that's actually just capable with the Commanders. You're in a really good spot. And that really helps you on the other side. It's the putting talent around your quarterback idea that people have, thinking it just means going out and getting a bunch of receivers and, you know, a left tackle. Well, the Commanders could use a left tackle right now. But it's also the defensive side of the football, because everything may evolve around quarterback, but he has no control over what goes on defensively. But that defense has control over what happens on the offensive side of the football. Because if you're down two touchdowns after the first quarter, that offense is abandoning their game plan. If they were trying to eat some clock, run the ball a little bit more, maybe some easier throws, some simple just move the ball up the field, bubble screens, whatever, right? If the defense is giving up two touchdowns in the first quarter, you're abandoning the run, and you're going to have to throw more. So the defense, in turn, is dictating what an offense does. And that's why it's so important to address these types of things. Plus, Dallas drafted Caleb Downs. Look, I hate to say it, but Dallas is probably going to be pretty good this year. I think they'll still have some issues defensively, but, you know, they went out and at least addressed it. They went out and tried to God, I hate it. Ugh, they probably will. They might even win the division. Like, every year everybody does this, right, with the Cowboys. Metal Chris, I feel like it's every year. Am I wrong where it's just like every year people seem to justify the Cowboys?
I mean,
like,
it's that time of year again where, right? It's like, the Cowboys' year. It is going to be their year every year, right?
It at least feels like this team, though, has something to offer this year. Like, they're better than a 7-win team like they were last year if their defense is, you know,
middle
of the pack.
How many playoff win team are they, though?
Well, that's, you know, we're only talking regular season. Playoffs, we know they're always going to choke. We're just talking about improving the regular season from 7 wins last year. But, you know, listen, Philadelphia's got an elite defense, and their questions are offensively. Dallas doesn't have questions offensively. They have questions on the defensive side of the football, but they've improved. And I'd rather, honestly, be in a position with the moves that Dallas has made this offseason, knowing that that defense could get better, and you've already got what you have offensively, versus where Philadelphia is, where, yeah, that's a great defense, but the ceiling may still continue to be low with Jalen Hurts and that offense. I mean, we've tried this year after year. It's different offensive coordinators every year. Is Saquon Barkley going to be Saquon Barkley from 2 years ago? It was 2,000 yards, so I doubt you're going to get that. But is there a middle of the pack there? Like, the more likely scenario is Dallas gets better on defense than Philadelphia gets better on offense. That's what we're looking at. Maybe the Commanders will sneak in and win the division. That's what we want to see. Dallas is going to be good, though, I think. Regular season, of course. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Aaron Donald watch continues too. I'm actually hoping he doesn't come back just because the Commanders see him this year, but it feels inevitable, right? You know, it's funny because we talk so much about super teams in the NBA, although they've pretty much died out at this point. You tried in the NFL too. It's a real tough game to actually play, but I would argue that it's easier in the NFL than the NBA because there is a level of chemistry that you have to have on a basketball court, right? It's going to sound very basic, but like, really think about it. It kind of is. All five guys are on the court playing a similar game. In football, at least, yeah, you've got like two great receivers, and then on the other side of the football defensively, you got some game wreckers that are going to get after the quarterback, and you're loaded and you've spent money on these guys, but the chemistry doesn't have to be as tight necessarily as it does with all five guys on a basketball court at the same time. I think I kind of put that in the right way, right? You kind of, it makes sense. Does that make sense, Metal Chris? I feel like it does, right?
There's, I get you, man. I'm following.
Different chemistry levels. Like I always look at baseball. Baseball is the, it's the most individualistic team sport, right? Like, when you're up, when you are at the plate, that is just you. On the other side of things, like, you have your defensive assignment out there on the field, and you got to understand tendencies with teammates and things. But a lot of it is like strict situations, grounding the shortstop, what's going to happen? But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just different. And chemistry with wide receivers and quarterbacks matters, and the tight ends and that type of thing. But there is still like different units that do different things. That's why it's always hard to just compare, like. We don't have the same conversation, right, about greatest football player of all time. It's greatest quarterback or greatest wide receiver. Now, a lot of people will say Jerry Rice, greatest football player of all time. Okay, but, you know, Aaron Donald is one of the most elite defensive linemen we've ever had. Totally different position, totally different skill set, as dominant as Jerry Rice was.
I mean, very different body type,
right? Like,
for
there's
those two.
It's so that's why, like, it's just, you have to kind of separate it a little bit more. We've gotten to the culture in the NBA where, yeah, you're just going to compare guys, even if it's 30-year difference and the game is totally different. It's like, well, he's better than him. Well, I mean, they played totally differently too, and it's a different era and everything's different. But you know,
and they also
have
like fancier gyms now, and they know a lot more about, like, you know, what kind of food you should be eating and drugs and all kinds of stuff, like.
And you know what, too? That's why when we have these arguments about, well, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar could have played in any era, and he could have been, yeah, but also what would his game have looked like if he refocused on, like, you know what? I'll even give you a better example here, since you just made this pop in my head. Whenever we talk about, like, Jordan versus LeBron, because this is always what makes people mad, right? You could say, well, Michael Jordan playing in this era versus that era. Okay, so is it Michael Jordan picked up out of 1996 and dropped into today's NBA where he's got to be a better three-point shooter? Or is it Michael Jordan growing up and as a kid that gets drafted?
Jordan didn't, you know, like, they didn't have zone defense either when Jordan was all these, you know, defensive players of the year, which I know he's man-to-man, it's hard, but, like, it was also just a different game defensively, too, then.
And they had hand-checking, and it certainly was a more physical game in that sense, but there wasn't an, you know, there wasn't an emphasis on three-point shooting like there was then. And, like, would Jordan have been a great three-point shooter if he came up and, you know, was a kid that was drafted in 2016? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's a totally different game, and you have to prepare. It's like when I talk about the evolution of bigs in the NBA. Bigs in the 90s played in the post. Hakeem Olajuwon, one of the greatest post players we've ever seen. But his game would have to evolve to be successful in today's NBA. It's
yeah,
just the way that it's gone.
Shoot a three, come on.
He could have. Again, most
he probably
of
honestly.
Most of the great bigs of the 90s had like some level of a jump shot. They just didn't use it very much. David Robinson had a solid jump shot. Ewing would shoot from 20 feet out. Hakeem would do it occasionally too, but Hakeem was just so good in the post. You know, Hakeem Olajuwon charges $100,000 a week to Wemby to like coach him?
It's probably worth it.
Yes, because he's teaching him his signature dream shake and all these other post moves that are still valuable in today's NBA. But, you know, it's the game has changed. It's evolved. And
I mean, Hakeem may have had the best footwork of any big man ever.
Unbelievable. Just, and when people talk about bigs, they always leave out Hakeem Olajuwon, and it drives
me
nuts. He was so good. Well,
I felt
yes.
like I played on Christmas Day once, man. That was awesome.
He was so incredible, you know, in terms of, like, if you were to... Like, to me, honestly, in terms of, like, skill set of post-playing bigs, Hakeem is number one there. Like, I know Shaq was dominant, but Shaq was physically dominant. Hakeem was far more skilled in the post than Shaq. Shaq didn't have to be. Shaq could just bully guys around, turn around, and dunk on you. It didn't mean that he didn't have the fundamentals that were needed, but, like, he's even said himself, like, he could have been in better shape, he could have worked harder in certain things, like, could have been even more dominant. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I mean, we know how skilled he was as a player, but he wasn't big and physical the way Shaq was. They're just built different, so they evolved their games and found what worked. And Hakeem was just incredible. I mean, just, yeah, and it's but that doesn't work in today's NBA. Now, you still have guys that play that way, but like just like you still have running backs in the NFL that are still like Catron Allen or whoever, right? The bruising backs, guys that are going to be short yardage guys. There's still value in that, but that's more of a role player. Like a big in today's NBA that's a good rebounder, can defend the post, and, you know, maybe get you some buckets from 5 feet and in, something along those lines, but he's not going to be, he's limited offensively. There's still value there. You just better be a rim protector or rim runner. You better rebound, do those types of things. You're more of a role player. But, like, the star bigs are unicorns. And the star running backs are versatile backs that can catch balls out of the backfield, too. So it's just, it's evolving with where the game goes. And the more versatile you are in any sport today, the better off you're going to be. And it really does make a massive, massive difference. So I think it's inevitable. Sonny Styles, geez. Aaron Donald is back, though. I mean, Miles Garrett and Aaron Donald together. God, the Commanders have to see them this season. Like, I think about it. Because you're not, they're just going to go after the left side of the line the entire time. Like, that's really just all I can think of is, like, Aaron Donald up the middle and then Miles Garrett just exploiting the left side. Chris Paul and, I guess, Brandon Coleman just getting just bullied by these guys. Not to mention the secondary the Rams had, too, because they said F them picks and got some corners. So it's like they're just absolutely loaded. And that Rams game comes week nine. So you've got the Eagles and that defense Sunday, November 1st, out of the bye. And then that follows.
Is there a chance Laramie's back by then? I don't know the exact. I know they haven't given a real timetable until after the surgery, but
I mean, they've said, yeah, they said timetable tends to be 4 to 6 months. But again, that's obviously, you're right, very, you don't know much till after the surgery, and then you start rehabbing and going from there. But I mean, if we're talking right now, we're at the beginning of, we're almost mid-August. We're kind of beginning August, however you want to look at it. August to September, September to October, October to November. Like 4 months puts you basically at December. Like, we're talking maybe Laramie Tunsil back before the playoffs. That's kind of what this is. And that's not great.
Nope.
Not great. It does not work, and that is going to be a nasty Rams defense if it's healthy. Week 9 at home. It's a 1 o'clock game, too.
Yeah, it'd be really helpful if we had a quarterback that could run around and scramble well.
Thank God there's a quarterback that can run around and scramble as long as he's healthy. Keep Jaden healthy. That is the most important thing from this team. Please. Nick Cashew on the Fan.